Good afternoon. My name is Liang Wang. So today I'm going to talk about the security and the privacy issues we found in the serverless platforms. This is a joint work with Meng Yuan, Ying Qian, Tom, and Mac. So cloud computing evolves quickly and follows the trend that providers do more and more on behalf of tenants. For example, in infrastructure as a services, tenants can run customized servers in VMs and control how to scale and run their applications. And in platform as a services, tenants have no control over the host VMs, but still can configure several aspects of their server and determine how to run the application. And in a new type of cloud computing services, which is called serverless or function as a services, take a step further. The server management test and even some parts of the application management test are completely left to the provider. So in serverless, the tenants focus on developing functions, which are small standalone applications dedicated to specific tasks. So they deploy their functions in the provider, and they only have minimal configuration access to the execution environment of the functions. They spend no efforts on the server management, and they are charged based on the execution time and the resource consumed by their functions. Usually the costs are very low. So serverless is great for infrequent tests, and it's become a general programming pattern. And now there are numerous serverless platforms with many tools to facilitate serverless development. So more and more tenants want to move to serverless. However, the serverless platforms are black boxes, and there are lots of questions about security and privacy arise. For example, tenants want to know if their applications are resistant to DDoS attacks in serverless, and if the providers can provide secure execution environments for their applications. Also, they want to know whether the providers can deliver the guaranteed performance. So a simple Google search shows there's lots of related works. So people care about these questions. However, we found that most of the works were conducted by developers using ad hoc methodologies. And we found some methodologies may lead to inaccurate result. For example, they forgot the time synchronization during the measurement, or they used some like incorrect hypothesis. So we need a better methodology and the more systematic measurement to answer the questions of the interest. And in our work, we provide the first in-depth study of the resource management efficiency and the performance isolations in three popular serverless platforms, AWS Lambda, Azure Functions, and Google Cloud Functions. So we found there are many issues in their platforms. So there's a lot of room for improvement. Like there are some performance isolation issue, consistent bugs, or resource accounting issues in these providers. And we also offer an open source measurement tool to facilitate the similar type of measurement. So in this talk, I will first talk about like how serverless works and introduce our methodology. And then I will present several important results. So how does serverless work? In serverless, the provider will launch a function instance, which is a container or sandbox, to execute the function when there is a request. The function instance usually has a limited resource based on the user configuration, and can only run for a certain time, like 5 minutes. And after the invocation, the provider will pause the instance and wait for the next request. So when the instance is paused, it will not consume any CPU resource, but will use memory. But the provider will not charge for the will not charge the tenant for the memory used by the paused post instance. And usually one instance can only handle one request at a given time. So the benefits of a serverless is that is they will automatically manage the scalability for you. So when there are multiple concurrent requests, the provider will automatically launch multiple instances to handle these requests. So to understand how the resources are managed and what the performance in these providers, we implement a function, a specific application called measurement function. The measurement function will collect the information from ProcFS, system command, or environment variables. Sometimes they will execute the performance test to test the performance of the instance. So we invoke the measurement function many times at the different settings from the vantage point in the same cloud region. So we test under different settings to see if the results are consistent across settings. And the most experiments were done from July to December 2017. And we repeat several tests as requested by the providers in May 2018. So to enable richer analysis, we want to identify which instance handle a given request. So to do so, we write a unique file on slash temp. We call it instant ID. So the instant ID file won't be deleted or modified during the instance lifetime. More specifically, when there is a request, if the function instance, the measurement function will check if there is an instant ID file exists. If it's not exist, it will create a new one and return it in the response. Otherwise, it will just return the existing one. In this case, we can figure out if a request is handled by a new instance or an existing instance. And we further found the information in AWS and Azure can be used for identifying the underlying VM host. In AWS, it's a special entry in ProcFS, and in Azure, it's a special entry in environment variable. So we confirm that they are reliable VM identifier using IO bits and flash reload co-resident test. So in Google, we didn't find such information, and our co-resident test failed because the performance varied a lot in Google. And with the instance ID and the VM ID, we are able to map instance to VMs and answer the basic question like how many instances are running on the same VM. So with these tools, we can partially reverse engineer the architectures of this of the serverless platforms. We first found that in AWS, a VM only host a function instance from the single tenants. Well, in Azure, it may host functions from multiple tenants. So that means the VM is shared among tenants in Azure. And still in Google, we didn't know because we don't have the VM information. So VM sharing could be very risky, as there's a recent report shows that there are the hundreds of vulnerabilities in Linux container that could be leveraged to escaping the sandbox. Also, it could allow different kinds of side channel attacks. So we married again in Azure, and in 2018, it seemed that they fixed this VM sharing issues. But a brief survey of the other platforms shows that there are the other serverless platforms still use this pattern, like Spot, StandardLab, and WebTest.io. So further examining the configurations of these host VMs, we found they have a variety of configuration in terms of CPU models. For example, in AWS and Google, they might use four different types of CPU models. And in Azure, not only the CPU model, they also use different number of vCPUs. So for example, in Azure, more than half of the instances we launched are running on the VMs with only one vCPU, and the 20% can run on the VMs with four vCPUs. So Different types of VMs could result in different performance, and our measurement actually confirmed this. So I will talk about this later. So next, we will answer several questions that have been discussed a lot by the serverless users. The first thing is the scalability. So the scalability is handled by the provider. Higher scalability means the applications are more resistant to DDoS attacks. But we found that only AWS can provide the desired scalability. And Azure and Google, they fail to deliver the promised scalabilities, even for those long-running functions. Most of the requests are handled sequentially. For example, if in one test we send 20 concurrent requests to a function that would run for 15 minutes, and as a result, it took more than 5 minutes to finish all the requests. And the next is the cold start. So cold start is the time needed to launch a new instance to handle a request. We found that AWS achieves the best cold start, followed by Google and Azure. And if we look at the cold start over time, AWS, the cold start latency are relatively stable, while in Azure, it changes over time and unpredictable. And we measured again in 2018. We found the cold start become 4 times longer in Google and improved a lot in Azure. So it suggests that the long-term measurement is necessary to better understand the characteristic of this serverless platforms. And we believe our measurement tool could be the first step to facilitate this. In conclusion, the applications in serverless may have varied cold start latencies, and there are other factors other than the network could cause this long latency, and I will discuss this now. So now let's look at these factors that might affect performance. So we first define three performance metrics. The first is the CPU share, which is a fraction of the 1,000 millisecond time period for which the instance can use CPU. So we measure this by keep recording the timestamp for 1,000 milliseconds and to see how many timestamps we have the timestamp. The next two are CPU, IO throughput, and network throughput. So for network throughput, we set up standalone dedicated IPERF server for each instance, and so the server side bandwidth won't be the bottleneck. And here I will talk about two factors that might affect the performance. The first is the core resiliency. So it's the number of instances running on the same instance that perform the same operation. So before talk about the performance impact of the core resiliency instance, I want to introduce how instances are packed on VMs. And we found that in Azure, they randomly placed instance on VMs. Well, in AWS, they use bin packing like placement. So they try to maximize the memory utilization rate on a VM by packing as many instances as possible on the same VM. For example, if you launch 25 instances of 128 megabyte function of memories, AWS will just launch one VM for that instance. If you launch 50 instances, this instance will run on two VMs. And we try to launch instance of different of random memory. The VM memory utilization rate in AWS is still very high. So the strategy is good for utilizing VM resources. But the instances on the AWS tend to be co-resident. The result is that at the more instances on the same VM perform the same operation, the instance will suffer from degraded performance. And the situation becomes worse in AWS because of this scheduling strategy. When you send multiple concurrent requests to a function, all the instances might end up running on the same on the same VMs and compete for the same VM resources. So we didn't show this in this figure, the code star latency. Actually, it's become 7 times longer in AWS. So overall, we need a better mechanism that can consider both VM resource utilization and performance isolations. And you may notice that the CPU utilization in AWS are the same, even under the high co-residency level. This is because we found the CPU share in AWS and Google is only proportional to memory. They document this online. So in AWS, if you launch a function of 128 megabyte memory, you can use CPU for only 80 milliseconds in a 1,000 millisecond time period. And if the instance has 1.5 gigabyte memory, you can use a CPU for more than 900 milliseconds in a 1,000 millisecond time period. So if you want better performance, like a higher, better code start time, the only way to do that is to increase your CPU. And the only way to do that is to use function with larger memory. The next factor is the VM configuration, like the CPU models and the number of vCPUs of a VM. We found it will not affect I/O and network throughput as well as CPU in AWS and Google. So the network and I/O throughput in AWS are very stable. And in Google, it's varied a lot, but it's not because of the VM configuration. Well, in Azure, a instance on four vCPU VMs can tend to get more CPUs than the instance on one or two vCPU VMs. For example, one-third of the instance on one or two vCPU VMs has the CPU share less than 60%. Will the instance on the four vCPU VMs have 99% of them have CPU share more than 60%. Besides, the instance on four vCPU VMs have higher I/O throughput and the network throughput than those instances on one or two vCPU VMs. So this is undesired for tenants, as they have no control over which VM their instance will run on. So if the instance it happened to place on the VMs with fewer resources, it will have a longer runtime, which means cost more money. So next I will talk about two specific bugs we found in the providers. The first is we found there's consistent issues in AWS. So the AWS failed to propagate function update correctly. We send 50 concurrent requests to a function and update one aspect of the function and send 50 requests again. And we examine the resulting instance used by this by the two rounds of requests. So ideally we expect to see there's no overlap. But actually, we found like 4% of them run an inconsistent or outdated function. In some cases, the AWS will launch new instances to run outdated functions, which suggests there could be some issues in the function metadata store. And in the other cases, the requests are handled by the outdated instance and with outdated functions. So there could be some like a request dispatching issues in AWS. This instance will return inconsistent response to the users, and it might cause some like performance or security issues or usability issues. So we think, so you cannot expect that the providers to make the function update correctly, and extra check might be necessary. Another issue is that in Google, we found that there are some way to launch a process after the function invocation. So we just leverage a synchronous nature of Node.js, and we can launch a process and run it in the background for 21 hours. And all the activities performed by this process will not be detected by the Google's resource accounting system. So that means you can use actual resource for free. So you just imagine how many Bitcoins you can mine in 21 hours, right? And we believe there are some resource, there are some issues with their resource monitoring system. I think at least they should monitor the entire function instance rather than a single Node.js request. So in summary, tends you to believe that serverless is ready, and but our measurement suggests it's not. So there are still lots of issues, and our work serve as a performance baseline, and also for the future research studies, and also provide several design considerations for future design of serverless platforms. Also, we have responsibly disclosed our findings with related parties, and we have submitted bug reports and get feedback and improve our measurement based on their feedbacks. Okay, questions?
Jeff Canning, Harvey Mudd College. I'm not sure this is really a question, but this is really cool. You've done a lot of neat investigation and found out a lot of useful things. I'm going to make a prediction that 6 months from now, all of the results in your paper that make a particular company look bad are going to go away.
Yes. So that's why, but we still, as I mentioned, our work still provide some performance baselines for the design, right? You can compare like your system with the system, with the performance metrics we found, and to say if it's better than the existing or those outdated platforms, or it's worse.
Nice talk, nice measurement study. Ekinak from Bell Labs. In one of your slides, you showed some concurrent request results, and you were saying that AWS was basically able to scale up to n instances.
Yes.
What was that n number? Because as far as I know, AWS already sets a limit on the number of concurrent executions that you can have, which is, I think, used to be 10 or 50, now it's actually 100. So I was just wondering whether your
That's a good question. Actually, we only, the maximum number is 200.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.